Pressing the button. And here we go. Are we going to speak to the whole 350 being, you know, 349.4? Like,
I think we do it next week, I reckon.
Just don't respond to the fact that we're delaying 350.
Yeah, it's funny.
Till somebody asks us. Oh, Scotty, did you want an extender for your headphones? Like, is that...
I'm coping. I'm good. Thank you.
You good?
Yep.
All right. Here we go.
Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, it's Trent here, and it's wonderful to have your company today for episode 349.4. This week on the show, we have got an unboxing to do. It is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles related, and it's a party in my wagon. And then, I don't know.
If the wagon's, what's it, rocking, don't come and knock it.
We got to practice these cold intros.
It's just spontaneous and no good. And then we're going to go and look at our movie reviews, where we're up to. We're into April already, unbelievably, quarter of the way through the year, and we've seen some of the films, so we're going to revisit what they're like and what our scores were. Joining me today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Scotty.
Cowabunga.
Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And Frank.
I was going to say cowabunga, damn it. Well done.
Tubular. What have we got in front of us? We have something big.
So here's a funny story. I went up while I was away in New Zealand. I had, not surprisingly, some toys rock up. It was another wave of Super 7 Ultimates. That was four figures, quite a sizable box. And then I got back, and then about 2 days later, I got an even bigger box, also from Super 7, thanks to Robo Toys. This was the Super 7 Party Wagon in the Ultimate scale. So if you think of some of the large Ultimates figures, they are going to, you can fit four of them, well, probably four in the back, two in the front, to be fair, inside this wagon. So this is, up there with the Thunder Tank in terms of size and scale for that particular line.
It perfectly huge. Fits the Ultimates figures, which makes this vehicle very large. Like, it's very, you know, even Frank comes in with this huge box. It's like, man, what are you carrying in there? A coffee table or something? You know, it's enormous, and it's amazing. Like, I can't fault it. It's just sensational. The paint apps, the wear, everything. You've added on the stickers. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so the stickers, they, as Super 7 have done with the Ultimate stuff, they take a little bit of license. So they've got the classic Foot Stinks sticker, which would typically go on your driver's side door. They have that, but it looks different. It's not a carbon copy of what you would find on your vintage figure. And even the spoiler sticker as well, that's got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles written on it. There's a bit of artistic license taken where it looks, you know, it's different colors. The other one is very plain. It's just got an orange background. This one, they've got sort of ooze slime thing to it. I'm one of these people who, if you look at the box art or there are instructions around where to put the stickers, that's what I do. I can't, to me, I just go, that's the instruction. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. And I think Trent even asked, oh, what'd you do with the vintage stickers? A couple of them don't appear to be inspired from the vintage toy, as near as I can tell. There's a skateboard and I think a pizza slice looking thing that's got the word cowabunga written on it. I've put those based on what the box art says. Yep. To me, that's finishing the toy. So I put those on. The one sticker I had a bit of an issue with is on the orange sort of flip-out door. There's a Boot the Foot sticker, which is sort of accurate to the original. Well, the style is different, but it does say Boot the Foot, and that's the little flip-out trap door that drops the bombs as you go. On the box art, it says, yep, that's where it should go, and it fits really well. The actual sticker, I reckon it's about 20% bigger than it needs to be. Like, it just, no matter which way you sort of rotated it, there was going to be some piece that was sort of hanging over the edge. So that's probably a little minor gripe. I think something obviously got done with the scaling, you know, when they made the sticker sheet, perhaps sort of post-production. But look, if that's the worst thing you can say about a toy, one sticker is not great, then it's a bit of a win.
Okay. One thing that modern toys traditionally do, and I know Master of the Universe were doing this a lot with their classics line, is where there used to be a sticker, they're now doing sculpted details. And I think this is a bit of a nice hybrid, right? Because there's still the stickers. And I think there's a lot of love for putting stickers of decals on. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, you as a person can customize it to how you want. So Frank's decided, I'm going to follow the manufacturer's vary, but Trent might be like, oh, I like this one the best, so I'm going to put this one here, and I'm going to put, you know, I might be completely different. You know, Scott might be, again, I'm not going to put any stickers on. So it's up to the collector themselves to make up their own decision, and that is quite unique. And, you know, we could have four turtle vans here on the table, and all of them are slightly different because of our sticker applications.
I don't think we could. This table is not big enough to fit four of those vans on here.
The leaning tower of wagons, you know.
But sometimes I think it makes sense to deviate from the original, right? Mm. Like, because, you know, I mean, the original Turtle Party wagon cut some corners, right? Because it's, you know, trying to be mass produced, trying to be cheap. So at the back of the original turtle van, you've got a sticker which shows the engine interior. Now, when you're doing an Ultimates version, let's actually make a door, let's make a boot, let's lift that up and have a sculpted engine inside. And that's just one example of some of the kind of improvements they've made at the Ultimates level. And there is a lot of beautiful details. But from the outside, one thing that I must admit always griped me as a kid was when vehicles use stickers for like windshields, and in particular when they put someone's face on a windshield, like the Channel 6 party wagon version is notorious for this, because it's got all the characters kind of on there, and it's like, well, what if I want to put
the character in the front seat? It can't be in the front seat and the back seat at the same time.
It just doesn't make sense. So what I love about this party wagon is instead of decals for the windows, we've got clear plastic for all the windows, and that's down the back, that's down the side, and obviously at the front too, which didn't have windows in the original, but was just clear.
They can open, you know.
They can open like a real combi van. Yeah. This is so cool.
They flip up.
Like, that's a lovely detail. I don't want to do it because I don't want to break it. But it's
you don't want to spill Scott's beer either. Yeah.
But they've really, you know, all those elements where you can kind of improve it while still keeping the aesthetic they've done, and that is beautiful.
I think it's even worth pointing out, like, the front of it, like the front of this van is the original one I've got on my hands here, is so iconic, but you actually have a good look in comparison to the other one, where you've got the turtle logo in the middle, that's just a circle.
Yep.
On the Ultimates version, they've gone for a sort of a raised turtle shell that has the logo in the middle, sort of like a real combi would have. The front bumper on the original is just a flat sort of square piece that has the grimacing turtle teeth sticker, if you will. On the Ultimates one, they've made it molded like a bumper would do if it had actually been molded in the shape of turtle teeth and stuff. And then there's other details you would expect for at this sort of price point, where your headlights are sort of colored in, and your brake lights and those sorts of details as well. The wheels actually come with
Pizza hubcaps,
which is an interesting choice. They were on the van when I opened it up, and so I just went, okay, I see what you're going for, but the first thing I'm removing is that.
I was exactly the same. I didn't think they looked right. The traditional hubcap, the green kind of shell design, looks really beautiful. And they've obviously done some improvements as well. You know, a bit more paint apps. I love the shell pattern on the roof. And they've just put in a nice spray highlight just to make that really pop.
The contours are.
The shell contours are. And this flip up bit where the armored plate that flips up, there's a little sort of satellite dish type thing on here, and that's all hinged now. So that instead of having to take it apart and reassemble it, that moves as you move that hinge part up and down, which is really nice touch. So they're the little, you know, nice refinements that they've been able to do at the sort of Ultimates level.
There's also a little tab so that it allows you to, you know, on the original one, that armor plate might sort of fall forward over time as the hinge gets a little bit soft, but there's a little tab there so you can go, if I want it all the way open and I don't want it to fall down, click.
Yeah.
And just sort of sits in there. I love the weathering on the front as well. When I first sort of pulled it out and it just sort of, you start catching things for the first time. I was like, oh, it's been scuffed inside the box. Yeah. How is that? Oh, wait.
Yep.
No, it's meant to be.
It's
there.
Painted like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Despite Australia Post trying their best to ding it, the box did come with a little bit of a crush corner. Now, in fairness to Super 7, it was double boxed.
Yep.
Each of those boxes had the hard plastic corners. Protectors.
Yep, yep.
Somehow, in the process of shipping, you know, my box is not it's not pristine. There is one corner that's taken a bit of damage, but, you know, I'm certainly not going to throw it out because of that. It's still gorgeous artwork on the front of that. So
yeah, credit where credit's due. So both of the passenger and the driver's side doors open and close, which the original one didn't. They're sculpted on the original, but you can, you know, sort of see. And when you close these doors on the Ultimates, they look seamless. Like, they close like they don't open again. That is ingenious. And just a credit to the design crew for making the door look like it's so perfectly sculpted that it doesn't open at all.
It's not like a line on a Transformers toy where you can go, this is clearly designed to come apart at some point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and so the turtle on this one, we're on your original one, the top opens with a single hinge at the back. You've got a back piece that does hinge up.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But then also you've got what you were used to in the animation where the top opens sort of in the middle and flays open. And in terms of, you know, you're talking that detail at this sort of price point, you look inside and as Ben, I think, made the point, he goes, you can see where they were sitting on the seats. There's like imprint of turtle shell on like the leather of these seats because that's where, you know, turtles are going to be sitting seat belts and all that sort of stuff.
They've thought it through. They haven't just like, okay, let's just do it here and here. They've talked about if you jump into a van, where are the first two seats that everyone's going to sit at? They're going to sit at the ones right inside the door. That's right. So they're the most worn ones. They're the high traffic areas and things. That is just, that's my retail mind, you know, going, you know, thumbs up.
High foot traffic. Yeah.
This is just ingenious. And all the extra paint apps and things inside really embellish all the working dynamics. And they've got pizzas on the back counter and things. The little, boombox comes out and it looks fantastic. And just everything painted interior, just I cannot promote that enough, how amazing that all is. But what blew me away is all the other stuff that comes with the accessories.
Tray. I'll pass it over to Trey.
Yeah. So, and we were trying it on. We were at Trent's house and he grabbed one of his Ultimates toys and we're trying all the helmets on the heads. And he put one of these skull sort of shell helmets on Leonardo, and that just gave me the vibe of a biker, you know, like a Harley Davidson riding biker. And I'm like, oh man, please give us the turtle cycle, because that's what I had as a kid. That was my vehicle, and it just a massive nostalgic trip, But amazing that they've added all these in.
Yeah, it's a beautiful accessory pack. I mean, traditionally, when you get an action figure, you're going to get weapons and guns and all the cool stuff, right, that you want to have with the action figures. But what I love, because it is quite unique to get them, are like little household items done in that really miniature scale. And this is no exception because there's a whole toolbox full of stuff. So you've got like a adjustable spanner and a wrench, both types of screwdrivers, you know, like a flathead and a Phillips head and like a hammer. And then even, you know, a plunger, like that is like a toilet plunger type thing. That is brilliant.
It's so Ninja Turtles.
It's so Ninja Turtles, isn't it? And like the plunger part is done with a really shiny paint app. Yep. So it looks like that shiny rubber. So it's really well done. A blowtorch, some dark sunglasses, very much like you see on Genghis Frog, that style of kind of sunglasses. What is brilliant, I love this. I mean, this is for Donnie when he's doing his welding. The welding mask. And it's sculpted just so beautifully.
It's got a little ding in the top as well. Yeah, like it's not pristine.
It's not. And even like the bit you look through is a shiny paint app on it. The two other helmets there, almost, you know, one's got the goggles.
More fighter pilot.
Yeah, fighter pilot style. Toolbox and a winch with real chain, which goes on the back. And two of those bombs, which came with the original, that sit in the door that flips out. So when the door pops out, it opens up. I think that is a really nice touch. And did I mention a canister of ooze as well? A little canister of ooze.
I didn't even see that one.
Which it looks like it's You know, can fit in someone's hand, so they can.
Yeah, I think it's designed to have one of the figures.
And of course, yes,
the flat mouser. And I was playing with this one before. The mouth actually opens and closes, have different levels of screaming from the animatronic mouser as he gets run over and then run over again.
Mm. You also get when you open up. This is really sitting at the top of the box. It's a Party Wagon new owners pack, like a little flip open thing, which looks really nice in the yellow and the green. And in it, you get a New York State Party Wagon license, like a little license card. License and registration, please. And you've got a picture of what looks to be Michelangelo there, and you can fill it out and put your name and hometown and birthday and all sorts of stuff in there. Apart from the stickers that go on the actual toy, you do get a couple of full-sized, more traditional stickers you can put wherever you like. You get a boot, the foot one, which is...
So probably for your own car, is that
what
you're saying?
That's right, car stickers, yeah. So honk if you're hungry for pizza. my other car is a Party Wagon, which I'm pretty sure is going to go on my car very, very soon. There was also, I think it comes with the... You can put the, looks like, battle damage type stickers on there. I'm probably going to pass on those, to be honest. I think the stickers that are already on there give it enough vibrancy and enough life. It doesn't need more battle damage, I don't think.
And the ejector seat works okay?
Yeah. So I'm curious. What I've noticed is it seems to want to swing. If you just pop it out and just sort of leave it, it seems to want to hinge inwards. So my guess is when you put the weight of a figure on, which I haven't done yet, you put the weight of a figure on there, it'll sit and hold it quite nicely. So
very cool. Wonderful item. Wonderful piece. Has a pretty hefty price tag, but... That's, I think it's justified for the size and the quality of the item. Where do we think, we've got the vintage Party Wagon sitting on our table, which we all love. Well, maybe I won't speak for Scotty, but we grew up with, we love, it's very iconic. Super 7 came out at the same time as NECA, at the same time as a third party.
Yeah, that's right.
And they put out these three modern Party Wagons. Now, since between... That one being released back in the late 80s, early 90s, and these more modern representations of either the cartoon or the toy version, we've had multiple different movie iterations and multiple different versions of the Party Wagon. Where are we placed with specialized toy companies, so not really mass market, but specialized toy company, putting out kind of like ultimate versions of the toys that we had? So... This is things like the Thunder Tank. This is things like, I know vehicles, but the Sewer Lair playset, this vehicle. I certainly was one that whenever I saw these, like I own this. Mm-hmm. I own the NECA one. I own a Thunder Tank. I've got an Eternia coming. I've got... that bloody, what is it, huge Cat's Lair coming.
Yeah.
Right? Like I see these things... I go, look at that. That is, I have to buy that. That is amazing. And then the reality sinks in when they arrive.
Where am I going to put this stuff?
Yeah.
Where, is there a limit on this sort of stuff? Like, how iconic does it have to be for us to jump on this? If they release the Mirage from Silverhawks. I'd be like, oh, look at that. I'm going to get that. And then I'd know where to put it.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is our feeling with kind of, what's the limit? Are you just going to get your favorite line? Are you going to jump in on something that looks cool?
I think it's got to be that, how you really question how much you love something. And even, was it Colin Betts? Massive G.I. Joe fan, and he was the Cobra
Mothership. Yeah.
Even he just sort of went, love G.I. Joe, but that particular design was only sort of briefly shown in the cartoon, which wasn't really necessarily his thing. So something iconic like this was a must for me as a Turtles fan. The Thundercats Lair, that's a pass for me, even though I had, quite a lot of Thundercats and love for Thundercats. So you really sit there and go, well, how much space have I got? There's also funds that come into it. But, these things, they're not made for kids. They're targeted all at us and those people with the disposable income and stuff. So it's – I saw some comments around, I think when HasLab did, there was like a Transformers, a G.I. Joe, and I think even their Ghostbusters HasLab all running concurrently. And fans are just going, well, this is outrageous. You can't make us do, you've got three going at the same time. And the feedback is you go, you don't have to buy all three. Mm. Like there's a real sense of FOMO around these crowdfunded stuff in particular, but perhaps more so with your specialized, got to put up, ordered and paid for this over a year ago, right? That sort of thing. You've got to have that sort of foresight to think about, well, how badly do I want this? Am I prepared to put down and put the money out? So, yeah, it comes down to, for me, it's just going, Turtles is my number one,
yeah.
You know? Transformers and Masters probably up there as well. I mean, I've got the Unicron. I've got Eternia coming as well. Like, if there was a Mirage, is not a bad example, I'd go, gee, that looks nice, but gee, do I really need
it?
Yeah.
Well, and this is last week in the news episode, we spoke about the Jokermobile.
Yep.
And to me, that's a perfect example. Like, yeah, I saw that cartoon that had the Jokermobile in it, and then I didn't probably think much more about it. You know,
yep.
Yes, I saw the toy when it came out, and I don't know, do I have one? I don't think I even have that.
Oh, the vintage, that they vintage, did a vintage one?
Yeah, they did a similar take. It's not quite that version, but it's the Kenner stylized version. So that comes out, and like me of you know, a year ago would just be like, oh, well, it's Batman the Animated Series. I've got all those figures. I need that to complete the line. Of course, I'll get it. Mm. Whereas me of today goes, you know what? It's not super iconic.
Yep.
Yes, it's cool. And yes, I like it. And it looks great. But that's not enough for me to want to have that in my collection now. So I'll be a pass on that. Even though I go, it's good value. Even though I go, I've got everything else in that line and it would complete it nicely. It's a pass. And so, and I know Fresh has been one to kind of bring this to attention to go, I've got, you know, this thing that I pre-ordered, this big thing that I pre-ordered. Now that it's all coming in, I go, how much do I want it?
Yep.
And am I going to move it on? But there is a real flip side, like you say, to these Kickstarter projects. And history will tell you that they go up in price once they are arrived.
Yep.
So, you know, what was a $500 item sells now for $1,000 because all those people that didn't order it do want it. So I don't think you can, I think you can always kind of make your money back on these larger Kickstarter items.
You just got to play the long game.
Yeah.
There is a long game.
Yeah, I saw someone selling a Unicron today, still in box, you know, $1,800, $1,900.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've made $1,000 profit off of that, more or less. And again, the comments, people, oh, that's an outrageous price. And other people go, well, where else are you going to get one?
Yeah.
Good luck trying to find one.
Find a cheaper one and get back to me.
Exactly. Yeah.
For me, it's like I went through this phase with Master Universe Classics. I had to have everything. I went and bought everything. I think majorly the only thing I'm missing is Point Dread and Talon Fighter, right? That's the only thing. And I skipped on that one just because I was at the pointy end of space. I just didn't have room anymore. And then I then had to justify. I'm like, okay, I don't have space either for Snake Mountain. It's a lot of money. And I sort of compared how much I paid for Castle Grayskull versus how much Snake Mountain was. Mm. Yes, given that was, you know, five or six years, whatever, gap between releases and things and the, you know, and different companies and different, you know, how many they were making and stuff. But I passed on that. So I've done that hurdle. You know, I you know, massive FOMO with you guys getting the Ultimates and things, but I just need to know where my limitations are and things. And now I'm moving towards, like, vintage is where my passion is. Like, I just love that older toy. You know, I know there's an end to the story of vintage, but there's not. Like, there's so many variants and variations and all this sort of stuff. Like, you know, it's sometimes a deeper hole to dig yourself down than sometimes keeping up with modern toys, because those just trying to find some of these older toys is near impossible versus the readily available pre-orders that you can place yourself on, you know, get yourself into and things. But yes, you know, for me it's space. Like, I just don't have that luxury anymore. I've had to recently move on all my NECA turtles, because cartoon ones, because I needed space for my vintage passions. So not that I don't love them or anything. It's just, that's where my personality's going, and that's where I see myself collecting-wise moving forward. So,
yeah, I kind of agree with what you're saying there, Ben. Depending how long you've been a collector, and the three of you guys have been doing it far longer than I have. So in terms of what you've got in your rooms, you guys are balls deep in toys. And if you want to bring something like this into your collection, it's probably more of a question of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. What is going to make room to bring something like this in? And we've three of us have got Eternia on its way. Shipping notification has been received. It's no longer a case of, where am I going to put this? It's a case of,
find somewhere to
now
put it.
I've got to get somewhere to put this thing. Today I spent 5 or 6 hours in my toy room working out what room I'm going to sacrifice to put this. It's essentially, it's a monstrosity of plastic that's going to go in my room.
And three towers of monstrosity. Well,
absolutely.
With a working monorail.
Yeah.
And look, you know, I'm lucky I've got a good working knowledge of tools and, you know, things like that.
That I can make space,
go to a hardware store and I can look at different components and understand if I buy those and put them together, I've got a sturdy table that blends in with my existing shelving system and that'll work really well. But damn it, Trent, I have no idea what you're going to do.
Yeah, I'm in a lot of trouble.
You're in strife, mate.
You could make another gondola with just your vehicles and playsets.
I need a second gondola.
See you around the toy aisles.
Yeah.
Aisles.
Very good. All right. Well, I think it's a hit. I think, in summary, great vehicle, really, really nicely executed, and it's big.
Mm. Yeah. And again, to the point about space, the shelf I have for my Ultimates, I've got the sort of tiered thing going on. There's three. So it's quite a deep shelf when you think the Ultimates are much bigger than your vintage stuff. And I'm going, I don't think end-to-end that's going to fit on that shelf. I'd have to have it at an angle or create another shelf out of thin air and that sort of stuff. So let alone I just remember when, you know, pre-ordered this and Eternia roughly around the same time, I was like, oh, that's a 2024 Frank problem. 2024 is here and I don't think I'm ready for it.
I'll tell you now, Eternia is somewhere over the Pacific as we speak.
Oh boy.
Very good. All right. Do we have a button to hit?
Do we? Wait a minute. Stand by.
There it is.
May the force be with you.
Wise man say, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
As you can see.
All right, it's movie review time. Or a bit of a movie check-in, I guess you would say. And there's been a bit of action on the movie front, a couple of drops. We talked a little bit a couple of episodes back about Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, and what the wonderful things the Yes Have Some and podcast guys were doing there.
Toy Anxiety.
Toy Anxiety is their other. I mean, they're slightly different people on each one. But wonderful, wonderful films coming out. We've had Dune Part 2, which Scotty and I went to see on opening day. Very excited about.
So good.
Frank, I know you were a big fan of Argyle and talked that up.
Yep.
Godzilla vs. Kong, some words muttered in the cinema, and then Scotty, as he realized they were coming out of his mouth, and the one that I think is hilarious, the Madam Web, and some of just the bad publicity, the but still, you know, I think...
Hanging. It's going to hang over for a long time. Yeah.
It was an absolute shocker. So here they are. I don't know if we want to sort of talk to them and then recap on some scores, where we're at. Should we just go down the list and maybe start see who's seen what? Have you talked to Argyle since
not,
it came
not
out?
Post, no. Not post seeing
okay.
it, no.
So we'll start with Argyle. Hands up if you've seen it.
That'll be me.
Okay.
Yep. So, yeah, this was one, I think at the time when we were talking this, I was on the precipice of going to see it with a bit of a movie night with Ali. And I got to say, it held up really well. There's probably, I know, I was speaking to some other people who've seen it going, oh, that one scene is ridiculous. And yes, there is one... a fight scene, I guess I'll call it, that is just crazy. What I realized at the end when the credits and stuff come up, made by the same people who did Kingsman.
Yeah.
So in terms of your fight scenes and that sort of stuff, there's a lot of really sharp action. There's some really great twists in it without sort of spoiling it too much. Henry Cavill is actually not in it as much as you might think, because he's the fictional version. Basically, Bryce Dallas Howard is the author. She's writing about this James Bond-esque spy who is Henry Cavill, but then there's the real life version, which is Sam Rockwell.
Ah, right. That and, makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, and there's, she goes a little bit stir crazy where she's like, I've written this. And in her mind, she's picturing Henry Cavill beating these guys up and just winking at her as he's knocking out bag. In reality, it's Sam Rockwell who is he's capable, but he's, you know, he's getting beat up almost as bad as the bad guys before he, you know, finally dispatches them and that sort of stuff. So it's a really great play on the James Bond spy movie stuff. John Cena is a wonderful sort of bit part character. You know, there's one point where a motorbike goes past with the person they're trying to catch, and he just basically arm bars that person and just grabs him from the back of the shirt and just holds them up. I'm going, yeah, I don't think there was like a harness he could actually do.
He's
that
probably doing
to someone. Look, really great. Bryan Cranston is sort of like the villain in essence. He plays it really well, and it's one of those movies where once you get into it, you go, I reckon they're crazy enough to do this twist. And when it comes around, you're like, yes, I'm so glad you did that. Look, really good. I'd love to go see it again, like when it drops on streaming or wherever, whatever service it ends up. Had a really good time with it.
Nice. Who's the main lady in gold?
Is it Dua Lipa?
Is it Dua Lipa?
Yes.
Oh, it is Dua Lipa.
Yeah, yeah. So there it's a crazy, crazy cast when you look at it, like... Yeah, Samuel Jackson is kind of like plays the, I guess, like M role if you're talking James Bond. Yeah, some really, really, really good stuff.
All right. Righty. All right.
So, Frank, you gave that a 17 that was going to be hit as your prediction. How does it hold up?
I'd probably stay with 17. There's a few things where you sort of go, oh, you've just jumped the shark a little bit. There's that one fight scene sort of towards the end. I reckon I'll stick with 17. As far as a hit, I don't know how well it was received sort of overall. Like,
just looking it up now for the first time, 5.7 IMDb, 33% Rotten Tomatoes,
really?
And 35% Metacritic.
Interesting. Okay.
Then you've got things that say, in a nutshell, slick, thrilling, and hilarious. So that's a good...
It probably leans a bit more into the comedy than the Kingsman stuff does. Yep. Kingsman, and there's funny stuff in the Kingsman and ridiculous stuff. It probably leans a little bit more to the comedy side than the outrageous action side. So, yeah. Okay, there you
go. Looks to have made box office $96.1 million. Whether that is domestic only, I'm not sure, but that's not bad. You know, 100 million, it's not terrible. Mm. And it seemed to be one of these films that had that kind of movie release, but also with the, I think it was it done by one of the streaming services?
Oh, concurrently, was it?
Well, not that it was a release, but it was always sort of, sometimes they're shot by Netflix, right? Netflix fund them and then sometimes put them in the cinema. I'm not sure if that was the case, but
no, I felt pretty big budget from what I saw. But,
very good
with all the actors and things. It's a
really good cast, isn't it?
Yeah. As long as you enjoyed it, mate. You know, yeah,
exactly.
Cool.
I'm keen to check it out on streaming when it comes through.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah. So am I. After your, I hadn't heard about it until you sort of gave it a
It's an
plug,
action movie that you can watch with people who don't typically like action movies, is what I'd say.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is one Leanne would like.
Yes.
I think I'd be able to watch it with her. Yeah. Sort of movie night for us. All right, moving on to June 2. I know Scotty and I have talked to this, so we won't. We both gave it a resounding 19 out of 19, doing very well at the box office. I think it might have surpassed the $600 million mark.
$600 billion mark.
So it's heading, I think now it's combined with June 1. I think it might be close to the billion.
I saw a stat that said something on its 250th day in the cinemas, or like basically its most recent day in cinema. It still made more than Madam Web did in its entire run.
Oh, wow.
Man. Still haven't seen it. I want to see it. Like, I just want to see it. I just don't have enough free time. And, you know, it's essentially me, myself, and I go in the cinema to watch it, and that's not super, you know, exciting. So I haven't seen it at the cinema yet. So
I'd probably go again, Ben, if you're looking for someone to go with. Yep. But I would... my biggest disappointment with June 1 was not seeing it at the cinema.
Yep.
I would recommend if you can to see it at the cinema.
Cool.
I think it just adds something to it.
I think any film adds an extra level of anything, you know, like of concentration and enjoyment and just everything, you know, then sitting at home and watching it over. Sometimes, you know, I'd watch this sort of film over two nights.
Yeah.
So, sit down, watch it, your phone away, no interruptions. I'm sure it's a better, show than watching it at home any day of the week. So,
Very good. All right. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I was really... I must admit, I think looking back at what we talked about, I was a bit on the fence with this one. I saw some of the CG and I was like, I don't know. And I was a bit... I actually went back and... So my younger son really got into Ghostbusters. I think one... And this is not that long ago. This might be 2 weeks ago. He's like, I want to watch Ghostbusters. I'm like, well, very good. I'll get out the DVD and we'll watch Ghostbusters. And then he's like, are there any others? And I'm like, yeah, there's Ghostbusters 2. There's... one where there's female Ghostbusters. I think that's also just called Ghostbusters to be confusing. Then there's Afterlife. And then there's this new one that's sort of out at the cinema. And so
does he get into cartoons or, you know, there's the whole real Ghostbusters?
Yeah, so, I haven't been down that path with him yet, but that's definitely something to consider. So he went, he watched them in a weird order. He watched like one, then he watched Afterlife, then he watched two, then he watched the female one. And then he went back and watched Afterlife again. And he was just, this week, he's been like, when are we going to go see Ghostbusters? Like, we can't go Wednesday night. We can't go Thursday night. You got your friends sleeping over Friday night. We'll go Saturday, which is today. So we went to this. Leanne came along. Leanne's dad came along. We went out and got some lunch and went to the cinema. And I was really pumped. Like, it hadn't got the best reviews, but it felt solid. And, like, I just loved it. Like, I thought it was a really good Ghostbusters film. It carried on from where the first one sort of left off. There was some sort of character development, but it didn't go stupid. Like, it wasn't, you know, a lot of the criticism I read was around, well, this character's not really that well-rounded or they don't get to do that much. I'm like, it doesn't matter. That didn't seem that important to me.
Is it almost an ensemble film because you've got all the old cast and the new cast from Afterlife as well?
Like, it is. I'd say there are characters from Afterlife, like there are the young Ghostbusters. So you've basically got like Trevor, who's from Stranger Things, and then you've got the
Phoebe,
who's I think pretty much kind of like the main character, I'd say. So Phoebe is Egon Spengler's granddaughter. So Trevor's the grandson, and Phoebe's the granddaughter. And then you've got like Podcast and Lucky, who are sort of like the other Ghostbusters.
But Podcast is almost unrecognizable though. Like, it took me a few times to be like, oh, that's Podcast.
Well,
you know. I heard Fresh make a reference. Go, oh, Podcast is now 36 years old.
And like, so what I would say is like Podcast and Lucky, that they were sort of peripheral,
pushed to the side.
In a sense. And then obviously, there's a big car, and they introduce a new character who's the guy from The Eternals. Indian actor. He's brilliant. Oh, he's in a lot of comedies, and he's fantastic. So he needs, you know, some time to play that role. Then they bring back all the living Ghostbusters, plus Janine is back. They bring back Walter Peck. They bring back, do you know what I mean? Like, so there's a lot in there. And so it does, I don't know if it so suffers, but you just throw in that many characters and you're not going to get character arcs for all of them, right? Like, I felt like Lucky didn't have much to do and Podcast was kind of just there to... Yeah, they could have probably made the
movie. Who wants to spend time with them when you could be chatting with Bill Murray and Paul Rudd? And that sort of stuff.
Look, and then there were some complaints that Bill Murray's, you know, didn't just kind of going through the motions. And I was a bit critical with maybe their performances. I went back and rewatched them in Afterlife, and it wasn't as bad as I remembered. Like, I think there was a couple of the way they shot that scene where they were fighting the ghost. It almost just looked like they always had them in the one shot,
the one pose.
Like they weren't out doing much physically, and that was my main criticism, I think. But the actual performances were fine. I think I was overly critical. So, like, Dan Aykroyd is great in this. I think he does it really well. And Bill Murray is like Bill Murray. He drops like a real cool one liner at the end, which is very Bill Murray. it's fun. It's probably not as laugh out loud funny as the original, but it's a solid, fun family film. Robbie loved it. Got some great Ghostbuster elements. Slimer is in there. He's fantastic. Yep. And like someone said, it's a bit like, a bit more like a real Ghostbusters episode.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, like the villain looks. Out. Yeah, the villain looks like a real ghost. He looks visually like you'd see in real Ghostbusters. Mm. They've got like the Ecto. There's like another Ecto vehicle in there.
Mm. That was cool.
That,
to see.
You know, to see that vehicle and how that worked. There was just some really cool moments, and I really liked the kind of science lab moments where they, because like the Ghostbusters, essentially in a nutshell, the Ernie Hudson character of Zeta Moore, he becomes a philanthropist and he's sort of funding the Ghostbusters. So he's kind of taken over and he's spending all the money on research and stuff. Mm. So there's a bit more resources behind them, and they've got this kind of lab where they're...
They're looking at the containment unit and being like, oh man, I think we're at capacity.
Yeah.
What do we do? We need to build another containment unit. Where does that containment unit come from? So they therefore have this other area that they're trying to move containment unit from the firehouse to the facility. Yeah.
So there's some cool, fun moments in that. And I think that lends itself really well.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I thought the finished product was better quality than I was sort of expecting. And I can't remember what I gave it, but I think like it deserves at least a 16.
Yep.
It's like it's a solid, fun family film.
Yeah. Mm. Cut, copy, paste what Trent said. I went and saw this on Easter Friday, so Good Friday, whatever you call it. Great opportunity to get out and see it with the family and things. So everyone's got the day off. Let's go and see a movie. So we went and did this, and for me, the only issue I had was it was quite drawn out to get to the villain, like to get to the main ice villain. You know, the whole movie is called Frozen Empire, and it takes a long time to actually get to that Frozen Empire stage. So that was probably my only gripe. Slimer was pretty much the only original ghost in this. You don't see. I was hoping for more ghosts and things like OG throwbacks and things.
Right.
But there was a lot, you know, on the flip side, one could argue there's a lot of firehouse references. There's a lot of like hidden, Bill Murray finds a little thing in the firehouse, which is a bit of a comedical moment and things. So that, you know, it sort of cancels itself out, you know, not seeing any other ghosts except for Slimer, but all these other tributes and stuff, which was fantastic. I've got to notch it up for a little bit because seeing with the family, the kids were so hyped. The kids were talking about the movie afterwards and stuff. So that's nice. Always exciting for them to get onto, the pop culture that we love and we, live in. And
have they seen the other ones?
They've seen them all. Yeah, we've watched them multiple times at home and things like that. And afterwards we got home and found online for free the whole entirety of the Real Ghostbusters series. So we've only watched a couple of episodes and things because they're slowly getting through Supernatural at the moment. But they're watching the cartoon on the side. So that's fantastic. And I occasionally walk in the room and like, oh yeah, I remember this episode, So that's pretty cool. I'll give it 16.5 out of 19. I certainly thought Afterlife was the better film, but that also lends to the fact that it's been such a gap, and seeing the original four Ghostbusters and things on the screen, you can't tap into that moment again a second time, but it was awesome. And this is, hopefully this is not a spoiler, but it was so cool seeing Janine in the flight suit. You know, that was a big moment.
That was brilliant.
That was just
and
like...
And they even reference, they even talk about, hey, Janine, you're in the suit.
And it's a bit of a like about time, hurrah moment. Seeing it on the big screen, and I think if you've seen an ad or something, or even looked at the poster, you know that scene's coming.
Yeah,
it's just it's a cool payoff for
I must admit I forgot I'd seen it on the poster, so it felt very fresh, and it was a cool moment. There is a character in this, and I don't know who plays it, but it's a ghost that actually has quite a bit of screen time.
Oh, okay.
So like it's a human ghost that interacts with Phoebe, essentially. Mm. And they have quite a strong relationship built. It's quite an interesting take. I thought that was like a really nice direction to have, because like she starts playing chess in the park and then the pieces start moving.
Right,
And then the ghost is like, boo. And she's like, Phoebe's just like,
yeah, whatever. Yeah,
nice to meet you sort of thing. And so it's not the typical reaction that this ghost is expecting. And that's quite a nice dynamic for a film that something is called Ghostbusters. Yeah. Okay, well, what's it like meeting a nice ghost or a ghost you connect with? I thought that was really good. And what Afterlife, I thought that was a good film. What I did like about Frozen Empire is it's set in New York, which I think is a big part of Ghostbusters, is that New York dynamic and, you know, how they interact with the city as well. And so there you've got the firehouse and you've got...
They also reference back to make it all canon that, you know, not Gozer, but Stay Puft Marshmallow Man happens. The whole New York Statue of Liberty. So they're making it all...
That. A universe.
Yeah, a universe. So I love that. And whilst it was a bit of a, not throwaway line, but it was just a reference in a conversation, it was enough to be like, yeah, cool. This is all, you know, continuous now. It's all in a linear form, which they did reference in Afterlife. They're like, oh, you know, looking up their YouTube videos and things.
As Egon's, you know, granddaughter and stuff. Yeah. Like, so there's that. But it's whether the events of the other films.
Yes. Yeah. So I love that. Love those little bits, elements and things. That certainly helped the film. And I love that sort of world building.
Yeah.
You know?
Beautiful.
Mm.
Have you seen it, Frank?
No, that was one of the ones that if not for New Zealand, I probably would have gotten out there sooner. But no, that's I'm probably keen to, you know, with the CG and whatever, probably keen to see that one on the big screen too.
Yeah, same. I haven't got around to watching it either. Ben, you had it scored as a hit 18 out of 19. And Trent, you had it as a hit with 17.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. 19. So pretty close to what you guys predicted.
Very good. Godzilla vs. Kong. Now, who's hands up for who's seen this? I was going to say Ben and Scotty. Scotty actually put the call out to see who wanted to come, and I'm just like, I can't sit through something like this.
Wise choice.
Actually, I did see a not a full trailer, but you know, in the foyer of the cinema, they play the clips, and I saw a shot of like them going, you know, flying on a plane going into the island, and it looked really cool. Like, it looked really nice. Mm. You know, there they were on the plane. It was building this anticipation.
Yep.
That looked really cool. But some of the fight sequences of these two guys.
Ree kept going on. She's like, because in one of the trailers, she's like, I cannot wait for the bit where Godzilla and Kong are running side by side, and then Kong jumps on Godzilla's back to ride him. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, so the hype was there. She just, Anyway, go on. You
opening night, myself and Joe, Brett and Sarah and Osti, we all gathered together, had a few beers in the city, and went off to watch the movie on the big screen. And look, I don't watch trailers, I don't look at pictures and stills or posters or anything like that for a film. I don't want any spoilers. In hindsight, poor choice, because it probably would have lowered my expectations to honestly where they should have been. The film starts out quite well. It's fine. We get some return characters from the the Godzilla versus Kong film. We don't get to see sort of Millie Bobby Brown or any of the characters from sort of the Godzilla or King of the Monsters come back into this. Mm-hmm. So we have sort of got just a carryover from the last film with the characters that were introduced there. Look, it's a Kong-centric film. And Godzilla is kind of his sidekick, if you will. So most of the story is developed around Kong and his now located in Hollow Earth. That's where he's set up as home because Kong and Godzilla are two alphas. They can't occupy the same area. So Godzilla's representative up on across the mantle of Earth, and Kong lives in Hollow Earth. And essentially what Kong is doing is he's living down there, exploring the area, and what does he find when he's exploring? But eventually he stumbles across...
No, he's feeling very isolated. So he's venturing out, seeing if there's anything, any of more of his kind out in Hollow Earth.
Yes. He's looking for more giant monkeys, basically. Yep. And eventually that's what we come across. Yep.
So that lots of monkeys underground?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of monkeys underground. And look, it's a slave labor.
Sounds like a cool band name, doesn't it? Underground Monkeys.
Underground Monkeys.
Exploitation.
It's exploitation. On his journey to find these
by the humans
that are being
lizard people.
No, monkey on monkey.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Another cool band name. Calling it.
Look, but before we get to that point there, like the film begins going downhill rapidly because Kong finds a smaller juvenile monkey that becomes basically the Jar Jar Binks of the whole film, okay?
Because in the trailers it was, is that a baby Kong? Yeah. Like, I thought that one.
As soon as I saw that baby monkey, that was my exit. Yeah. Yep. That was my, I can't watch this. Yeah. He was animated really weirdly as well.
Yeah, yeah. He's a budget Kong for sure. In writing and in CG.
Scrappy
Doo, Diddy Kong. Like.
Look, to cut it short, yes, we've got slave monkeys. We've got an overlord monkey running over the whole lot of them. He essentially is trying to find his way back onto Earth, because that's his goal overall, is to find a way to get back through the portals onto Earth, take over and rule as the dominant species.
Is this where they cross over with Planet of the Apes? Is that where this is?
Yep, if that's what gets you off, so be it. The whole time in the background, Godzilla is, you see him periodically, he's being destructive, he's fighting other monsters and absorbing their powers, which is a whole new power set that...
Well, yeah, and which I love because you've seen it in the trailers or even on the posters. Yeah, as my kids came up with no insight from me, he went from Ken-Con, right? Ken Godzilla being blue to Barbie Godzilla being pink. And I just thought that was hilarious. Because he fights, spoiler alert, he fights Magikarp's evolution.
Yeah, and absorbs his powers. Yep. I'm going to put it down to the fact it's like some sort of radiation energy absorption.
Sure.
He changes colors. He's now pink. That's fine.
If your issue is how does a giant dinosaur absorb powers, if that's your issue with this film, you didn't read the warning labels.
No.
Yeah, but Kong then gets a power glove.
Yeah, who made that? Monkeys, obviously.
No. Oh. No, it was the humans.
The humans made
that. Yeah, there's a whole story. And yeah, starts off with a toothache and goes from there.
Yeah. There's frostbite involved. And next thing we know, there's an aerial drop of a bionic arm and Kong has
a power glove.
Nintendo power glove, basically.
Yeah. Yep.
I was still invested at this point. Like, I hadn't thrown a towel in yet, but there's a fight scene in this film, okay? And I understand that it's a bit of a reference, it's a bit of a homage to the Showa era Godzilla films, but for the love of God, why do we have to have two kaijus fighting and one of them gets suplexed onto the pyramids of Giza? Why do we need to do that?
That's what broke you.
That's when I threw in the towel, and I kid you not, and I'm not going to use the language on the podcast I used in the cinema, but I'm watching this scene and I hear rather loudly someone say, "This is forked." Sarah and Osti, who were sitting next to me, turned to me and they're like, "Oh damn, I just said that out loud, didn't I?" And it was loud.
To be fair, in our original movie, sort of like when we looked at movies coming out, I don't think we actually covered Godzilla X Kong.
I
couldn't find any scores in the original run. I put that in there after Scotty sent through the detailing of that message, just going, if Scotty's saying that out loud in the cinema, I need to hear what happened. Story. I need to hear how we got here.
I mean, I read something that... I would have thought this was like Madam Web style, but it didn't seem to be getting that kind of response. People were like, it's a fun action film.
I'll give you my two cents. So I went and saw this on my last weekend off, and we had some cinema vouchers left over from Christmas that we've been sort of holding for a whole family experience. You know, that's what we use, the cinema vouchers, and if we just, Ree and I, go by ourselves, we always pay. So we had these cinema vouchers, and there's a new, what they call D-Box, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like you sit in these already luxurious chairs and things.
It's a rumble pack.
But yeah, you do. Yeah. You get rumble pack, and there's ever so slightly left and right movement, right?
So Of the chair.
Very subtle, but you can change the level. So I had mine on max the whole time, right? And we weren't sure how the kids would go up because, you know, when we went to Queensland last year, the kids hated the roller coaster rides and stuff. So my youngest Alice, she had hers on. She turned hers off, which was a great, you know, like thing to be able to do. You can change the levels. And Scarlett had hers about halfway, and Rhi, I don't know, she was too far away for me to see. But so I had mine at max, and I thought the whole experience was fantastic. I thought seeing that film in particular with that much action, with that much ground slamming, with that much carnage of cities and things, I thought it was absolutely the perfect movie seeing it. You know, if I went and saw, Oppenheimer, I'd be sitting there waiting. The atomic bomb would go off. Oh, cool, there you go. There's a vibration. And then I'd be waiting. then it's done. That's the only, you know, vibration. I'd say.
Not the best use for the remains of a day with Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Yes. anyway.
Driving Miss Daisy. Oh, what a he's driving too slow. Go for a pothole.
Aim for the pothole.
So I thought it was an absolutely fantastic opportunity to use the whole experience worked out well. It was absolutely a hardcore popcorn movie. You go in, you leave your brain at the door. Yeah. You let these, it went from one ridiculous moment to another. Sure. And it just stacked on ridiculous moments after another. The whole, Kong getting the arm done, the Godzilla just going around, finding all these creatures that, we didn't know about that, or we do know about them. All of a sudden they bring up this map of the world and there's like dozens of kaiju all around the world that, can somehow just go undetected and not destroy a city, just by blinking. All the time. So it just, you just absolutely cannot think about this movie too much, right? No. And my argument to Scott is Godzilla Minus One was our movie, right? It is our mature level, thought-provoking, oh my God, there's real, stakes at play here. Whereas Godzilla versus Kong is absolutely, let's have some beers, let's have some popcorn. Take the kids, take the family. It's all ages. It's to get that new generation into the kaiju fights and building, world building and things. It's absolutely just to make money. It's not directed at the hardcore fans. And, if a hardcore fan like you doesn't like it, I think you're looking at it too seriously. if I dare say that in the nicest possible way, because I will say this movie, hands down, is absolutely bananas. It is bonkers. It is stupid. It is.
Are they giant bananas?
Well, they offer a giant banana at one stage or two. But, it's absolutely okay. I've got nothing to do on a Friday night. I don't want to go to bed yet. Let's chuck this hilarious movie on. Yep. And you could almost commentate how ridiculous. Have a few mates around and just
drinking game.
Yeah, it's just you'd be very, very drunk by the end if you drank to certain, criteria. It's just so stupid. But I had a ball. I love the fact that, again, taking the family, the kids loved it. They came up with their whole thing of Ken and Barbie, Godzilla changing. Just seeing the build up of Kong's the girl, the native tribal girl that can connect to Kong through sign language and stuff. There was a beautiful story arc of how she finds her people and stuff like that. So that was a nice little story arc and things. I felt very Mothra-esque, and it was just, without spoiling too much more, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, but I put Minus One Godzilla and this at
Different levels, even
like Kong Skull Island was okay. This is serious Kong, movie, and now they're just trying to
make money.
It is just ridiculous, and they'll probably continue to do this until we stop watching them because that's what the Godzilla and thing franchise do. They don't have 75 years or whatever of movies without churning out terrible ones every now and again. So
I read an article that basically suggested you got this and then you Godzilla Minus One, and it was basically an East versus West thing, whereas in Japan, where he comes from, he's seen as a destroyer, right? And it goes into basically tying it back to the atomic bomb, right? That sort of fear of destruction from an unstoppable force. Whereas these sort of movies they've sort of taken a page from the Marvel, superhero movies and turned him into this, Godzilla's here to save us all because he's really a hero, even though, and it was just these two different worlds. And it occurred to me, it's like, you know, all these other franchises that we love, how there's something for everyone. You may not know the Ninja Turtles comics, but if you want to buy the toys, you can do that. And I feel like Godzilla's done that a bit now, where you've got, if you want your serious Godzilla minus one movies, they're there for you. If you want your popcorn movies, that's there for you as well. Like, it's the Godzilla franchise branching out and going in two, from the sounds of it, very different directions. But, you know, something for everyone.
100%. And it's also when you cross two franchises over, you know, like, it's never done to the serious extent as when they're sometimes done independently, like Alien versus Predator, Freddy versus Jason, you know, all those whacked out characters that you only hope to see in comic books, then suddenly hit the big screen, they're never as serious or taken.
So you're saying the only way we get a He-Man movie is if we cross them over with Ninja Turtles?
I'll take that any day of the week, mate, for sure, especially looking at these toys. So. Yeah. So, Scott, what's your rating? Or do we even have ratings? Or
We actually didn't review it back at the time. I spared you guys the pain.
What's your rating? What's your rating after seeing it?
Look, walking out of the movie there and then, I thought it was complete crap.
Yep.
But in hindsight, talking to some other people, Austin in particular, he sort of was like, well, there is a precedent for this. Okay, they've done all this sort of stuff in the past, and my initial going into the movie is that we had a pretty serious setup with Godzilla and Kong Skull Island, that this was just such a sharp departure to go to the comedy aspect and, you know, blown out of proportion, nonstop fighting, that I wasn't ready for it and I just didn't gel with it there and then. But if I decide to watch it again later, maybe I'll have a different opinion. But right now, it's safe to say it's a 10.
Yeah.
It's not awesome. But I'm in no hurry to sit down and watch it again either.
Yep.
16 for me.
16
out of 19. I did enjoy it.
You had fun with it.
I certainly did. And I think that's helped by the experience of the D-Box. I did enjoy that. I'm not going to jump in the D-Box again because it was expensive and things. But also, you know, having the family there and them all cheering on and loving it. You know, I remember this part and... You know,
we're adds to the experience.
Yeah, and talking about, you know, the whole Magikarp, the evolution, you know, it's just funny to see a Pokemon character in the movie type. It's not that character, but it looks like that character. Right. So when you see it, you understand. Just those little elements made for a fun conversation, you know, days still after the movie. So, yeah.
Cool.
All right, time to jump into our last film, which is Madam Web, Hands Up, if you've seen it. Okay, we can all play the game. All these events happened in Madam Web except one. Can you guess which one is a lie? Okay, so we're going to go through about six different events.
Okay.
To pick out the lie. Event one. Madam Web is born in a cave in Peru with the help of a magic spider person. Number two. The three spider women never get powers and are only seen in costumes during dream sequences. Number three. Evil Spider-Man is killed by a large Pepsi sign. Number four, Madam Web becomes wanted for kidnapping by the NYPD.
Oh.
Number five, Madam Web runs down Evil Spider-Man in her car twice. Number six, Peter Parker is born but not named. And number seven, Madam Web inexplicably splits into three ghost-like versions of herself near the end of the movie. Can you guess which one of those did not happen in Madam Web?
I'm going to go over this running over Spider-Man twice because it's probably she hit him three times.
I mean, logically, you go, well, you know, it's the to do with the evil Spider-Man dying, but I feel like the Pepsi one actually did happen, to be fair. But this movie, and again, haven't seen it, but everything I've heard, I know a couple of those things to be true. I'm going to guess they all bloody happen.
Yeah. That's the kicker. None of them. They're all real. Yeah. I think that's it. So, I don't know. I saw Sydney Sweeney promoting her new...
I saw Sydney Sweeney too.
That's a topic for Dave's graveyard.
Yeah.
No, she was promoting her latest film, which actually looks quite good. I think it's like I don't know a lot about the Omen franchise.
Yep.
But it looks like a kind of horror.
Damien.
Yeah. Right, part of that. But she does this little thing where she's like, hey, guys in Oz, you might have seen me getting a case of arachnophobia. And she kind of almost is paying it out.
She did a spot, I think, where she hosted Saturday Night Live, and she goes, you know, oh, I'm Sydney Sweeney from blah, blah. You also might know me from Madam Web, but probably not.
Yeah.
Because no one went to see, like, just straight up paying it out. Like, and even the lead Dakota Johnson has almost gotten in trouble because she said quite, not funny things, but quite inflammatory things about the whole process. And so far as
it sounds like a shit show.
Well, it is, even so far as saying that, you know, Sony told them they were going to be part of the MCU.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like really trying to sell them in order to get them to sign on the dotted line.
Which is just so terrible. Which is almost lawsuit, you know, suable. Yeah,
exactly. So, no, I, again, you talk drinking movies, that's one where I go, I would watch that on the couch only. Every time the movie makes me go, ugh, I'd have to have a drink and it could be a long night.
Yeah, I'm so keen to see it on streaming for free. I'm not paying a cent to go and see it, just to see how bad it is.
Maybe that's what we'll do for our 350.
Well, there is a weird car crash kind of philosophy here,
right?
Like I do want to see it now that it's so bad. Like if it was sort of mediocre, like, you know, you hear listening to the Kong thing, I'm like, I struggle with those films personally. Like I find them really hard to watch. I found that one of them that Robbie, it just went for like 2.5 hours. I'm like, why is this still going? But this is in that morbid curiosity, like Cats when that came. Like I albeit watched only bits of it because I couldn't make it through that film because it was so bad. But I had to see it. I had to see what everyone was talking about. So that there is something to that. I don't think I'll be good for a group viewing because I'll get maybe 10 minutes I can do.
He'll be drunk. He'll be the drunkest person in the room 5 minutes in.
take a drink every time this film annoys you. Trent, it's still the opening credits. Calm down.
So I can't. Well, none of us can comment on the score. What did we give it, Scotty?
Okay. Well, we all said it was going to be shit, but Ben very generously gave it a 10.
Woo!
Trent, you gave it a 3. Frank gave it a 5. I gave it a 2, and really there's only 2 interesting things in the whole damn film from what I can understand.
Yeah. Touché.
I'm just seeing if we can...
Scores and stuff.
Yeah, just what it's got. Well, just to contrast it to something.
If you want stats on the money it makes, Box Office Mojo, I think, is the...
You can do it on your hands, can you?
All right. It's got a 3.8 out of 10 on IMDb. So, what, that's
I've 7 seen worse out of movies.
19? Yeah, that's not terrible. What's got a negative? Is that a negative?
Can you do that?
No, I don't think it is.
That's not possible, surely. Yeah, so not great. So we were pretty right with our
jokes.
I was looking at this like, you know, Godzilla vs. Kong made $4 million yesterday, like in a day.
Well, what did Madame Web?
So it outperformed Madame Web's full box office run in one day as well.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, okay.
Just a bit of trivia. According to Dakota Johnson, so she played Madam Web, in an interview with The Wrap, the screenplay underwent extensive rewrites, saying there were drastic changes, and I can't tell you what they were. The original screenplay, which was described as darker and very Terminator-esque,
that sounds awesome.
Inspired, would have seen Madam Web and the Spider Women trying to protect a pregnant Mary Parker from a time-traveling Ezekiel Sims who wants to kill her to prevent the birth of Peter Parker.
But see, that seems more in line with what I found out from the Spider-Man cartoon. You know, she's more of a...
She's a clairvoyant.
Yeah, you know, and so she can see this issue happening and like, okay, we need to protect, you know, the newborn baby. Whereas whatever happens in here just sounds so... throw mud at the wall and see what sticks and we'll go with that. Like,
Yeah.
Interesting, and that's what she's basically saying. The film she shot was unrecognizable from the version of the script she signed on to.
Okay.
There's probably something to that. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yep. Yep.
There you go. Yeah.
If you've seen it, we'd love to hear from you.
Because we're not going to.
not for a while anyway. Unless they fast track it to free to air. I know it's on the Amazon, but you got to pay for it.
Right.
But I will.
I'm pretty sure your wife could find it somewhere.
I'm sure she can, but she's in no rush. I don't think. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Alrighty, that ends another episode. The 350 draw is ever close, but we might be about three more weeks away from that.
We've still got to come up with an idea, don't we?
Well, we're getting close. All right.
Let's be honest, we're never actually going to record it, are
we? What was the other podcast we were like that did the similar thing to
this? My wife's going to kill me.
Yeah, they waited for a live show at one of the cons. Oh. They did a con show with actual live people like, and stuff
on stage. Yeah.
And they had the Eurolegions guys there and stuff.
Yeah.
I listened to Eurolegions the other week. They had Mal just got back from a trip to America.
Yeah. Nice.
So that was really cool.
Yep.
They're doing very well. The guests they have, like, they're in each other's pockets now, talking to all the amazing 1-6 shooters on stuff like that. And just, it's a really, really interesting show. Even though they say a name and I've got no idea who the hell they're talking about, just talking about the culture and just everything about. Yeah, it's just a really cool show. So give Eurolegions a listen. Great guys. And John's been a fantastic supporter of Toy Power for a very long time.
He's the man.
So. Yeah. Knows his stuff. Knows how to pronounce all the names.
Yes.
Mm. And lovely, lovely Irish dulcet tones coming from John. So tune in for some other wacky accents to your Australian accents.
100%.
Get your accent fix. Wonderful. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Toy Power. And to our Patreons, thank you so much for your ongoing support. And as always, your chatter on the Discord is amazing. Stay safe, everyone. Take care of one another. And we'll see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.